How long have you been living in New York?
I came here in 82 for graduate school, and then I left in 85, and we drove cross-country very slowly, and I came back in 89.
So you drove, let's go back a little bit. So you came here in 82.
82, and then I went to the Columbia writing program. Then I left in 84, and I did a lot of traveling. I went to China, went to Italy. Then I also got married, and my husband and I drove across country very slowly. And we settled back in New York in 1989. We've been here since.
How do you view New York as compared to San Francisco? You're a native of San Francisco.
Yes.
Was there a culture shock when you came here?
Yes, it was. and also going to Columbia was quite a shock. You know, it's a whole different class and world of people. I had gone to Berkeley, which was very different. I was born and raised in Chinatown. And so it was a whole new world for me to be outside of Chinatown. And the East Coast was an extension of that kind of travel.
Is your husband also Chinese American?
No, he's American. He's Anglo American.
I'm sorry. He's what?
He's Anglo American.
Anglo American.
He's from Oakland. He's also a writer with a book coming out next year.
What's his name?
Mark Covellas, and it's a book called Gloria coming out of Pocket Books. And we've both been working very hard on the fiction, so that's our connection.
Yeah.
We don't have race, but we have writing.
Obviously, when you grew up in Chinatown in San Francisco,
yes.
So when you came to New York, you had no intention of living in Chinatown in New York.
No, but when I graduated from Columbia and I had this big question of what to do for a living, the first thing that popped into my head was to go into the sewing shops, the sweatshops, which is where I grew up, which is what my mother did when she I spent a lot of time in the sweatshops as a child, and I also, you know, did a lot of sewing for her at home, which was an illegal thing, but this is what all the kids did. And I thought that was my option. That was the first thing that popped into my head.
So what did you do?
My mother, I naively mentioned this to my mother, and she had a fit. She said, I didn't raise you to do this kind of work. I want better for you. It took a long time to find the courage to step further out into the world, because I think what I inherited from my parents was the courage to see the world. I mean, they were immigrants, they worked very hard, they labored all their lives, you know, for the simple fact of giving us an opportunity, of giving us a place to stand in this new world. But the courage that I needed in order to do that, to take a stand and also to take a step outside of Chinatown, was something I had to muster out of my own life, something I had to call up. The courage is something I experienced and witnessed, but I had to call it up in myself. So that took a lot. I did some temp work. I worked for magazines, and I waitressed. I proctored exams. My mother also got me a wonderful job sewing on contraband labels. 5,000 jeans in a room. It was a very dusty job, but she was worried about me. We were, very low on funds, and she says, "Well, you know, there is this job," and I did that. I taught English. I taught creative writing, expository writing. I did whatever I could do to give myself time to work on my writing.
So you're a first-generation American.
Yes, I was the first generation born here. I had a great-grandfather who came over for the gold rush, but he had what we call a transcontinental marriage. He had a wife and family in China. It's what we call the transcontinental marriage, because in the early generations, they never intended to stay in America. They left their wives and had their children, you know, whenever they went back to China. And he had a wife and children at home in China, but because of the exclusion laws and the miscegenation laws and the social revolution, he ended up living 60 years in this country and dying in this country without ever meeting his children or having his wife, the comfort of his family by his side. And I was very moved by this kind of life. There was a whole generation of Chinese bachelors that I grew up with, men who didn't have family, and that inspired me to really think about what it meant to live a life as a laborer. And I think my creative work comes from witness of that generation and their labor. My parents were one of the first wave of young people to come and decide to live here, and to have a family together, to live together as man and wife. And so the children in my generation really feel like it was a special time. We had parents with whatever difficulties they had in their lives. We had parents who were together, who were in the same country, who wanted a family. So it was unusual.
Now, in the novel Bone, Ma, who is the mother figure, of course, comes from Hong Kong. Did your parents also come from Hong Kong?
My mother left China in 1953, so she was part of this whole wonderful young, growing desire to change China. It was hard for her to leave China during the revolution. And
China or Hong Kong?
She left China, and she lived in Hong Kong for just 1 year.
I see.
So she was, I have pictures of her in her communist garb, and she taught me how to sing The East is Red when I was a child. And it's very hard for her to leave her country, but she left her country and chose her family. She chose for the marriage, you know, to come and be with my father. She lived for 1 year in Hong Kong. And I always felt that she was very courageous. She left, she married my father at a very young age, and I wanted to write about a woman who chooses love in very unusual ways. She marries one man for thrill, the second man for convenience, and she has a very dangerous affair with a third man. And I wanted to write about a woman who made well of whatever she had, and made do with her condition, and made good of the kind of love she could have. I think this was very common in that generation of women.
Well, being a New Yorker, from the Midwest, transplanted Midwesterner, actually. Of course, I fell in love with Chinese food, and so all over the city there are Chinese restaurants, and when you go in and you get your food, you're almost a stranger. I mean, you are served. I mean, that's where most of us have contacts with Chinese Americans, or Chinese, period. And there's always something strange and mysterious about the Chinese that I see, is as though they have a closed society, mm-hmm. and of which I'm not a part, mm-hmm. because they rarely involve you.
Right.
And that's the impression I got in reading Bone, that there is very much a closed environment,
mm-hmm.
and people who seldom even leave the environs of Chinatown.
Right, right. I really wanted to write about that, how from the outside it looks very closed and insular, but I wanted to write also from the inside. It was like living in a glass globe. Our parents came for the simple fact of giving us an opportunity, but it was so hard to leave because they brought also not only their courage but their fears because of the humiliation and the degradations that they had suffered. It was very hard for them to let their children go. But yet, we as children felt this was what was given to us, this wonderful world outside. We could see it, we could feel it, we could touch it, and we wanted to break out, but it was so hard. I also wanted in my narrative to create a character with a very true voice, and so that there would be very little distance between the reader and the narrator, so that there was an intimacy between Lei and the reader, and that Lei could invite the reader in and say, this is my world, this is where I live, this is what it feels like. I wanted to respect the reader in that way.
Of course, Lei has both feet in both worlds, doesn't she? She's very much an American, but also reluctant to give up her Chinese heritage.
Yes, yes.
All three sisters are, actually.
Yes, they all have difficulty. One way I think of the book is that it's about the desire to escape and the dangers of doing so. I think that we all try to leave certain things. We all want change. And I wanted to explore that, what it calls, how we make that change happen in our lives. It's very difficult to call up the courage and say, this is finished, let's move on. And each sister tries to do that in ways that's true to their own lives.
And one sister does succeed and does indeed make the step to leave Chinatown almost irrevocably.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, she exiles herself.
Now, the story is centered around a family tragedy, which is the death of the middle sister, I believe,
yes.
Right? And it's a tragedy that, like most tragedies of that nature, can never fully be explained. Can
yes.
you talk about that a little
yes.
bit?
Yes. Well, I really wanted to honor Anna's decision to commit suicide. I also wanted, again, to look at suicide as an immigration, as a leave-taking. The fact that she jumps from a housing project that's called the Nam is important. The fact that she breaks all her bones, that she jumps toward Chinatown and not facing outward into the larger world is significant. The fact that she jumps off the 13th floor, which is in my dialect, in the character's Chinese dialect, a way of saying 13 sounds very much like to live. All these things were important in creating a sense that there is really no answer to something like this. Death. When I believe that when we face death, it's a very personal, intimate moment. We can never know how we will be, how another person will be, what that moment of death is. But I think it's a moment of great courage. And I wanted to honor that and to explore that. And I wanted also, the suicide of the sister is not the whole point of the story. It's not just her as an individual. It's her very complex interrelationships with her family and with her community. And I really wanted to open that world, that she is, this is one action, but it affects everyone on so many different levels.
Tell me about the significance of the title.
The title is very important to me. There was a ritual when I was a child. These old-timers felt it was very important to have a resting place in their home village. And so it was very common that the bones of our ancestors were sent back to China for proper burial. And this wasn't possible because of the war. This was just not, it was closed, we couldn't do this. And my great-grandfather's bones remained here in this country. And for me, it was important to create this book and to write it in a foreign language, almost as if to say, I cannot send his bones back to China, but I can offer him a resting place. I can offer him a resting place in a foreign language to remember him, to give rest to my memories of him. And to those of his generation that labored so hard to give us a chance in this life. I felt that these old men in my childhood, when they died, they had a generosity. When they died, they gave us the world. They had this way of passing. I remember one old man came and gave my parents a watch and said, this was just a very common, you know, watch. It wasn't Rolex. It wasn't even a Timex. He came to us and he says, this is my watch and I want your son, my brother, to have this watch and for when he goes to college. Now, this was so wonderful because it was the gift of time, the gift of hope. I give your son this hope of time and education that he can have a place in this world. And it was so moving to me. And I kept that. I kept memories of these old men like that. And I felt that they gave me a rich, rich outlook. And they had very hard lives, and I don't mean to romanticize them. They were often drunkards and flea men, and in the book they're talked about in terms of their sitters and spitters and flea bags in the park. But they had the possibility of joy in single moments. They always dressed nice. They always had their three-piece suits on. They always greeted us, and we were loved, truly loved.
Now, you said your mother actually worked in the sweatshops. What did your father do?
This comes close to linking the book up very close to my personal life. My father worked at many things, and the most inspiring
was he in the merchant marine as well?
Was that he was in the merchant marine. And I was so fascinated with the ocean as a child. What was out there? What was it like being in the ocean? And what do you see out there? And that sparked my imagination. It was a common occupation, the sewing industry and the shipping industry, for men and women of that time. That industry is dying now. The maritime industry is very bleak, and the sewing industry is moving overseas. But it was very common while I was a child growing up. This was one of the few occupations that was available to people who had no language skills.
So there are a lot of autobiographical elements in the novel.
In the sense that one thing that was important to me when I started the book was to really respect private lives and personal relationships, but also to be very giving about everything that enriched me in my life. I try to really go very deep into my personal life in terms of understanding the true emotions. I wanted this to be a very true story.
Was there a suicide in your family?
There has been a suicide. I have also been, a lot of these old men committed suicide, and I went to many funerals as a child, and I was very moved by the funerals because there was such a merging of life and death.
How did it happen, coming from such an unlikely family in terms of literary goals, that you did decide to try to carve a career as a writer?
Well, I came from a family of talkers. It was very noisy in my childhood. I also had a wonderful neighbor who worked at the Fairmont Hotel in San Francisco. He was an American-born man, and he served in the Army, and he was a janitor at the Fairmont. And one of the joys of my afternoons was that he would come back from work. His shift ended at 3:30, just about when I got home from English school and just before I went to Chinese school. And he would come, and there would be a thud at our apartment door, and he would have yesterday's newspapers that the hotel guests didn't left behind. And I would just really treasure that half hour of reading the news, and it made a big impact on me. I grew up in a house with no English books. I didn't speak English until I was four when I went to school. I probably didn't hear English until I went to school. It was that close, that my world was that Chinese oriented. So it is very curious that I came to write a book, and I came to write a book in English. But somehow I felt that was the challenge, that if I could write this in English, and that if I could offer it to English readers, that this world wouldn't be so closed, that I think these issues of family and where home is and how to love and how to be a family, because I write about fractured families, families that are not always blood-related, but are time-related and kind of heart-related, that this is something that we all share. So I felt it was, in English I love the language.
Do you still speak Chinese?
My parents don't speak English, so I do speak Chinese. That's my
Can you write in Chinese?
I went to 12 years of Chinese school, and I had to memorize a lot of Chinese poems. I had to, I can sing all the Christian songs in Chinese. I can sing the East is Red. You know, I learned many things in Chinese, and I retained many things in Chinese. I don't think my Chinese is I'm not literate in Chinese.
I'm not sure how many first-generation Americans will speak their family's native language. I mean, it leaves. You know, they get out of practice,
yes.
Except maybe around the home occasionally. But I know a lot of Italian people, they just, first-generation Italians, they just have lost it.
Right. Well, my parents never had the chance to learn English because they worked so hard. They had so many jobs, and they just tried to carve out a living for us. That was the only way we could stay close to them.
You could do that in Chinatown, though, couldn't you?
You could do that in Chinatown.
And you can do that in certain Spanish areas. For example, I was behind a middle-aged woman who was lined up at the clerk for the jury. And I was lying because I wanted to get out of jury duty myself that time, and because I've served so often. And this woman was ahead of me, and she spoke Spanish, and she had her son there to translate. And so the clerk said, "Well, why can't she serve on a jury?" And the son said, "Well, she doesn't speak English. She only speaks Spanish." And the clerk said, "Well, how long has she been in this country?" And the son said, 30 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the clerk just threw up, 30 years and doesn't speak English?
Right.
So they let her go.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's possible to exist, I guess, in a closed net society and not be overwhelmed by the surrounding culture.
Yes, I do feel that you know, it should be encouraged. You know, you can be a part of this world and this society if you learn the language. In my family's case, it was very difficult because there were not the social services available for them to learn, and they just made so many quick decisions about having a family that overtook them. But I think it's really important to learn the language, because I think languages open the world up. I feel that I have a different personality in Chinese than I do in English. And I've noticed this with friends who have foreign languages. There's a whole different world of feeling there.
Kind of wrap things up, perhaps you can just tell me what lies ahead for you in literary terms.
Well, I'm very interested in working with a character in the book, Mason Louis, who's the lover of Lei. I think he's a fascinating character, and he's a very strong character with a very complex nature. And I'm working on something with Mason.
So I have a feeling you're going to be extending the family saga.
It's a big family story, and I hope to.
Well, it's a big family story, but you write in an almost minimalist style, very, very tight.
Thank you.
It's almost like a poem all the way through.
Thank you. I really worked very hard at the language because I wanted the language to reflect the kind of frugality of the hardworking class. They don't speak unless absolutely necessary, and then even then it's so well felt out, and I really wanted the language in the book to reflect that.
Well, Bone is a beautiful novel, Faye Manning. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.